This is the Book Legion Podcast, where we review thought-provoking books to give our Legionnaires the knowledge they need to dominate the next level of their life.
Everybody, thanks for joining me on the Book Legion. My name is Tizer Evans. Today, I'm going to be talking about The Age of Cryptocurrency by Paul Vigna and Michael Casey. So I've been very interested in cryptocurrency since the early days. The first time I heard about it was probably 2010, 2011, right after Bitcoin had just launched. It was still less than $100 a coin. I really kicked myself in the ass for not loading up. I heard Max Keiser talking about it. And if you don't know Max Keiser, he's someone that believes in more Milton Friedman type of economics, which the book does get into, and really understands that the fiat currency, more of a libertarian type view. And so he was an early believer in crypto. I kind of let it go, you know, not really giving it any attention. I said I looked at it pretty seriously 2011, 2012, never moved, never bought any. And then when it exploded and went to $20,000, it kind of caught my attention again at the end of 2017 going into 2018. Since 2018, I have been an investor in cryptocurrency with Bitcoin. So I wanted to say that this is not financial advice, just recovering the book. I do believe in it though as an investment. So, but what I want to cover today is just three kind of takeaways from the book, or three things you'll learn in the book. The book is really meant to be not an investment book on how to invest in cryptocurrency, but more just what it is, the age of cryptocurrency. It's more of a history of going from how do we get from fiat to where we're at now, and what are the origins of Bitcoin. And so I wanted to read it for that purpose because I really, really wanted to understand what is cryptocurrency versus blockchain technology. Where did it come from? Why did it come about? Why do people put so much value on it? So that was the reason I picked up this book, especially being an investor. I've made quite a bit of money off of crypto. It's something now I completely understand thanks to this book and several others. But this was like the first book that gave me a really great foundation. So I wanted to cover it for those who are interested in cryptocurrency and wanted just to understand more about money in general. So the first part of the book, what they talk about is they give you a whole background in history on fiat currency and the origins of fiat currency. And this is really important place to start because, you know, living here in America, when you ask the average American, how do we accumulate debt? They really have no idea. They don't really understand what a deficit is. They don't really understand what fiat currency is. They don't understand the Federal Reserve or the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, how that came into play. And I've read E.G. Griffin's book, The Creature of Jekyll Island, is a fantastic book if you want to go learn about the Federal Reserve and the origins of the Federal Reserve for here in the States. But fiat currency goes started way a long time ago, way back in the day, with what they used to call usury, right? And so usury was when you would drop off your gold at a vault or a bank. You know, the Medicis are one of the first few really famous families to start the banking industry in Italy. And basically what they would do is they'd have money they would loan you. And with that loan, you would pay back with interest, or what they call usury, which really in a lot of religions has been illegal. So it's a really interesting concept. And so they go into the deep into the origins. I mean, they go back 1,000 years and talk about the origins of fiat currency. I think actually really going back to the Babylonian era, which was 5,000 years ago, and just talking about the origins of money. So they did a great job of talking about the origins of fiat currency. You know, I strongly suggest you go back and look at things like why the gold standard was removed during the Nixon administration and how that's played into devaluing the American dollar, understanding that the dollar is a world reserve currency and that all petro oil, or the petrodollar oil in the world is traded for the most part in American dollars, and this helps keep the currency very relevant. So that's all important to know, and you know the book does get into this, but it's important to understand really what fiat currency is and how its value is derived and how we got to where we're at. So how crypto, it says again, Bitcoin didn't come around until 2010. And the reason why what the book kind of starts to go into is the origins of fiat currency. And then it jumps into where we got into the housing crisis in 2008 here in the United States, which basically was a ripple effect through the entire world. And really what happened with that was the Clinton administration had removed the Glass-Steagall Act, which was put into place back in the Great Depression by the Roosevelt administration. And what this did was kind of separatize personalized banks and commercial banks, right? So we don't want to be investing or have investors investing with people's 401ks and savings accounts. And right, so we want to keep all that money separate. Clinton made it a lot easier for commercial banks and privatized banks to come together. And so what happened was you had all these bad subprime mortgages that got packaged together as something that they weren't, ended up blowing up the entire banking really system and housing market, right? All went up into shambles, but the banks were all bailed out, right? The banks were bailed out by the American taxpayers. And this is really kind of what set off the origins of Bitcoin. So you had people in this cyberpunk era back in the 90s that were kind of like libertarians, that were the first kind of like hackers and coders and programmers, and were kind of hacking into banks and kind of like, fuck the system, fuck the man, right? These are the guys we think are the ones that created Bitcoin. So I'm going to kind of move into now the second part I wanted to cover is the unraveling of the market, because when everybody, you know, millions of people lost their homes, and it was all due to the banks, and the banks didn't get in trouble, and nobody went to jail. Boom. 2 years later, Bitcoin pops out. And what Bitcoin is, it's a decentralized currency, meaning that I can send Bitcoin to you, right? And the coin is the currency that we trade. Blockchain technology is the thing that validates the trades, right? So when you have a decentralized currency, you have to have some way to be able to validate the transaction, and that's what a bank does. So if I'm going to buy a Coke from a convenience store, what the convenience store does is its system checks with the bank to make sure that I have the money, and then there's an instant transaction where I trade my money for the Coke, and the bank is able to validate to the store that I actually have money in my account, right? So that's the middleman, is the bank. Now with crypto, it's just I'm giving the money to the store clerk or to the store owner, and like there's no bank involved, right? So it's peer-to-peer interactions, completely decentralized. So that's, you use Bitcoin to be able to purchase the good. Now, how the Bitcoin, the blockchain technology works, again, this is very basic layman terms. I'm not some guy who's a coder, programmer, I've never built a blockchain, so go easy on me, people who are watching this, gonna tell me that I'm wrong. But basically, what the blockchain technology is, you have a bunch of computers all over the world that basically the creator of Bitcoin built this ecosystem. And they basically said that if you are, when something's purchased, then what happens is all these computers fight over validating the transaction, or what they call a ledger. So a mathematical equation has now been prompted, and the computer in the ecosystem that solves the mathematical equation, which is basically validating that I have money, so that way the business owner doesn't get screwed, right? Then we'll receive a reward for using their energy from their computer to validate the mathematical equation, to validate the transaction. So all Bitcoin has really done is now all these computers in the ecosystem competing to validate these transactions. And every time they validate the transaction, it's called mining, and they get a fee for, again, to get a little bit of Bitcoin for validating transactions. So you basically have all these computers competing with one another in this ecosystem to complete the mathematical equation. When that's completed, then it validates the transaction between user A and user B without having to use a bank, right? And it's kept on this mathematical ledger in the blockchain. So that's kind of the very basic layman term of what mining is and blockchain technology. So the founder of Bitcoin is Satoshi Nakamoto, who they don't know who this guy is. He was a guy that released some white papers to people in that cyberpunk type community, like some hackers, and was trying to get some buzz. And people read through the white paper and said, yeah, this looks good. Like, this technology would work. So then the technology was deployed. People started mining, right? So people started having to validate these transactions and mining coins. And there was really no perceived value. But as more and more people found out about the technology, people started realizing, well, shit, this is great. If I'm here in the United States and say I want to buy a house in London, I don't have to go through five banks. I could use Bitcoin to complete my transaction. And or if you don't want the government or Big Brother involved in what you're purchasing, and this is how Bitcoin got famous because of Silk Road, which was a Canadian website where people were buying drugs using Bitcoin because, again, is decentralized currency. So you have a wallet where you keep your Bitcoin, you send it basically to another wallet, but you don't have names. It's just a wallet address, right? So it keeps it completely private. And that was really the point of it. So as it got up and up and up more, this guy released Bitcoin, had no idea who it was. No idea who the founder was, released this white paper, got out into the ethos. But the goal was basically to not ever get fucked over by the banks again. And so that's why it was created after the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis, after watching millions of people lose their retirements, 401ks, their homes, no bankers, went to jail, banks were not in trouble, they got, you know, slap on the wrist from the Obama administration, and people were really pissed off about it. So it was basically aimed as a way for people to be able to purchase goods and exchange with one another without having to disclose who you are and without having to use banks on a very superficial, fundamental level. Now, there's all kinds of different what they call alternative coins or altcoins out in the marketplace that aim to use technology to solve lots of different problems. So like Ethereum is kind of like blockchain 2.0. Lots of coins are built on the back of Ethereum-type technology. Now you have things like Cardano, which are kind of like the third wave of cryptocurrencies. So it's really interesting because now all these different currencies are aiming to solve different problems within our society by using great pieces of technology. And the coin is just a means of to be able to transact or use the technology, for lack of a better way of understanding it. But really, again, there is similarities with, you know, the drive value of Bitcoin is a little bit different. It's still kind of the value that we place on it. But what's interesting about Bitcoin and why I personally have invested in it is because you can look at Bitcoin like an asset because there's only a finite amount. I believe there's 21 million Bitcoins that were ever created. So as people mine them, right, every 4 years. So when you first started mining, you know, if you won like the mathematical equation, I think you got like 8 bitcoins. And then after 4 years, it cut in half and it goes to 4. And then cut in half after 4 years, it went to 2. And it's going to do this all the way into the year 2100, and then there'll be no more bitcoins to mine. So like anything, like real estate, you can only build so many houses, or there might be only so many houses within a geographical location. And it's like a supply and demand. When there's more demand than there is supply, the prices rise. And so Bitcoin is different in that versus fiat currency, where we can print as much of it as we want. We could print 100 trillion US dollars, right? With Bitcoin, you can't. There's only 21 million. So it's helping the derived value go up. So it's a little bit different. You can look at it more like an asset, like you can a piece of real estate. Now, the market is not stable. I've seen highs and lows. Like I opened my folder this morning, because Bitcoin's not like the stock market. It trades 24/7, never stops. Down 25%, it's a bloodbath right now. So I would say do your homework before you invest. This book is just, again, it's a great book if you want to understand the origins of fiat currency, kind of the origins of blockchain, Bitcoin, where it came from, potentially who created it, what happened, why they decided to create it, and then where we're at today. So The Age of Cryptocurrency, again, by Paul Vigna and Michael Casey. Great book, very, very detailed. It's about 350 pages, but it's a good read. I found it to be entertaining. So a lot on cryptocurrency. Sorry if that was a bit of a rant. I kind of went off. First one, kind of doing investment that wasn't an investment. So I said, go easy on me. If you guys haven't, or you guys want to buy the book will be in the show notes, so just scroll on down. I think the book's around $15. You can pick it up. So if you're watching this on YouTube, it's right there. If you're listening on a podcast, wait till you're not driving, and then scroll down and purchase the book. Said it's really good just for general information on just the origins of money, if anything, that most people don't know about. And if you guys haven't done so, please subscribe to the podcast YouTube channel. Would really appreciate it. Drop me a 5-star review. Leave me a comment. Makes it easier for other people to find. Also, would be much appreciated. And introduce yourself. If you're watching this on YouTube, let me know who you are, any books you want me to review, or ones that have been impactful for you. I'd be happy to share it to others. Thanks so much. I appreciate everybody listening and watching. Mm-hmm.